listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be, ladies and gentlemen, and I am Michael Sterling here and alive.
And I can see clearly now the rain has gone.
Yes. It's actually coming back.
It's drizzling a little bit.
It is.
Yeah.
They said another 3 days.
It's raw, as my mother would say.
Raw. A thunderstorm.
Thunderstorm?
Yeah.
When?
They said possibly today, tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that concludes the weather. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on State of the Arts. How are you, Michael?
I am good. Thank you, Paul. But before we get started here, we'd like to get some things out of the way. I want to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar each and every week.
Absolutely. And joining us in studio today, the stars of Cabrillo Music Theater's sensational all-new production of Once Upon a Mattress. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Betts Malone and Mr. Scott Reardon.
People cheering, just hiccups. They're just not with it today. My apologies.
That's the rain.
They'll have to be reprimanded.
They will indeed. We'll so welcome. Thank you
welcome
for taking
both of
some
you.
Time
hey,
on your day
thanks
off.
Thanks for having us.
We know it's a precious Monday. We know what that's like.
You know, we didn't realize that when we were picking our day the week. We thought Mondays will be great because people will have it off.
That's right.
And then what we've encountered that people have it off. Maybe they don't want to come in. But
it's our only day off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much. We're so grateful.
Well, in New York especially, we feel that with some of our Broadway stars that are kind enough to come on the show. It is a big deal for them to, you know.
Plus, we get a lot of hairdressers, and Monday's a day off for hairdressers.
Oh, that's
nothing. Nothing.
No.
Wait,
not
let
that.
Me fix that. Plus, we get a lot of hairdressers. There we go.
Oh, my.
Okay. Sorry.
What is next?
Am I just wasting my great type five
exactly.
on hairdressers that I had?
Exactly.
Anyway.
So, how are you? How was your week, Paul, before we get started here?
It was fine. Show's going good.
Yeah.
Still hating the beard.
Yeah.
Missed the motorcycle. My life's in the toilet, Michael, basically. Now, thanks for asking.
He just sold his motorcycle
of many years.
Big ass Harley type thing.
Well, Honda, but a Harley wannabe. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just I'm a little blue about it. Just say I'm a little blue.
Yeah.
But I realized it was the wiser thing to do.
Well, I think I thought of you over the weekend with that nice weather. You probably would have been out on your bike.
I would have been out. I would have been out, but so would the people who drive and text, and that's the issue. So, which I know is a personal
big peeve of mine.
Yes. Is your car all rigged with that Bluetooth stuff and all that?
Yeah. I have the car that speaks to you constantly. It talks to me all the time.
Really?
Seriously.
What's
its
name?
What's its name?
Yeah.
I have
you
no
name
idea.
Your car.
You didn't name your car?
Yeah. No, I have a name for my car.
Do you
what
is that? Ben?
Rudy.
Rudy.
Yes,
Rudy?
It's a red Prius, and its name is Rudy.
That's
nice.
That's appropriate.
Sweet. Uh-huh. And because?
Because of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, okay.
I got it right before Christmas.
Well, there you go. Well, you see that you have a backstory to that.
Do you have a name for your car, Scott?
You know, not my new one, but my very first car. It was a 1989 Jeep Cherokee.
Yeah.
And my friends named it Rosie Phalange because it was red, so it was Rosie.
Oh, okay.
Rosie
so we have
Phalange.
A theme.
Yeah.
Rudy, Rosie,
yeah.
Rosie, Rudy. Let's call the whole thing.
What's Phalange?
Well, apparently, it's a Friends episode reference thing going on. So
I just
went with it. Thought it was unique and funny.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah, it is cute. This is the you know the fusion the
Ford fusion.
Ford fusion.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that Microsoft Sync technology? Or
yeah,
something like that.
It tells you everything that you want to know and many things that you don't want to know.
So, what's the voice like? Is it like
it's very proper, you know.
Really?
Yes, it's a female voice.
And, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's nice.
See,
it's pleasant, but you know,
I
really,
have a Toyota, and the voice is Rosie Perez, so it's really unpleasant.
Mokey!
Yeah, no,
I am waiting for them to come out with a car that reprimands you when you make a wrong turn. And
I would love
like
it.
That.
Exactly.
Get over, you idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm reconfiguring because you don't know what the hell you're doing.
Exactly.
I told you to make a right.
dumbass.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this one scolds a little bit too. If you do that when you put the GPS on, if you do leave the route that she has decided, she will say, "You are leaving the route." And she gets a little German.
There it is.
Yeah.
You will turn.
You will turn. That's the in and out. You will enjoy
you
it.
You want to reestablish the route.
Oh, man.
It's that's their tagline, you know. Comfortable driving with a hint of Nazi.
Exactly.
Great.
Hey, you know, Paul, as we said at the top of the show, we have a surprise.
No, we didn't say it at the top of the show. We said it privately.
Oh, privately, yes. So now we're
going to
say it
before
we
hit the airwaves. Yes.
In fact, you should tell us about this, right?
I certainly will. Joining us via telephone today, we have a surprise guest that one of our in-studio guests knows. Here's a couple of clues.
No pressure.
Here's a couple of clues. You want to kick
us off? I'm sorry.
I don't mean to throw you. You wrote the damn thing.
Well, first of all, she is taller than both you, Betts, and you, Scott.
That's not hard.
That's not a lot to aspire towards.
However, yes, I did. I felt a bit like Gulliver in the lobby. However, just because she's taller than both of you doesn't mean she's older than both of you.
Uh-huh. Second clue. Do I see the wheels turning?
They're turning, but nothing's coming out.
Turning, okay. Nothing's happening. But she is a singer, like each of you. And she made her Broadway debut in 2008.
Oh, I think I know who
it is. Bum, 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 bum.
Final Jeopardy. What? I fail.
No, I'm sorry, but we're sorry the time is up.
Yeah.
So, you'll have
sorry.
To just... So we'll just,
since they could not identify,
should we give them the clue?
I think we should.
All right, let's do that. Here's a little hint as to who our mystery guest is.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Melody Hollis.
When my parents named me Melody, they sealed my fate. For when you've got a name like Melody, then Melody's on your plate. Ever since I can remember, I've wanted to sing and perform. Yes, ever since I can remember, I've been singing up a storm. Singing a song, and I keep on singing as the day goes along. So just give me some words and give me a tune, and you can bet you'll find me sailing over the moon to Melody Land, where I can sing any song that I happen to choose. Melody Land, where there is never a worry or care or the blues, where everyone's smiling, so come on, come mile in my shoes.
She was amazing. I saw the opening of your new club, Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
That's right.
And she burned the room down.
She did.
She was incredible.
And she is headlining this Sunday, April 29th, doing her own show.
That's great.
Now, that song she sang, is that from something?
It was written for her.
I was going to say, boy, that's really convenient.
Yeah, by Bruce Kimmel. Kimmel, who directed her act and is one of the great saviors of putting musical theater on... recording it, you know, for those shows that don't always get the cast recording.
He picks up many of them. The Critcherland guy. All right.
Exactly.
So should we give Melody a call?
I think we should.
All right. Yeah. We're dialing out now. And we'll see if she picks up and is there to chat with us. This is high-tech radio.
I know.
Yeah, you know.
Wow. Hollis.
Hello?
Melody Hollis.
Yes, is this Michael?
It is. It's Michael Sterling, and it's Paul Strohle.
Hello, Melody. Thank you for joining us on State of the Arts today.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. You don't know me, Melody, but I did see you at your opening night at Sterling's Upstairs. Not your opening night, but you performed at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, and really looking forward to your upcoming performance. You must be really excited about it.
Oh, I am so excited. It's going to be so much fun.
Well, you know what, Melody? We have somebody in studio that knows you, that you've worked with in the past, and we didn't tell her. We just put them through a grueling 3-4 questions trying to guess who our mystery guess who our mystery guest was, and they unfortunately did not come through for us. So we had to intro them by playing the title of your show, the song, one of your tracks from your new CD.
Right.
So who do you think's in studio with us?
Well, I don't know.
We need to give you a little... maybe we should tell you that she is someone that you worked with about 2 years ago here in the Southland. Did a wonderful show. The show was in Long Beach.
Oh, someone from Annie?
Perhaps.
Would it be Miss Andrea McCardle?
No, it's not.
But equally as talented.
Equally as talented. Keep going. No pressure.
Shannon Warne?
No.
Michael, give it up. Give
All
it up.
All right, I'm going to have her.
Oh, wait, I have one more guest.
You okay. do?
I do.
All right, go
the
ahead.
The amazing Bette Malone.
There you go.
There it is.
All right, well, take that. She's a big winner. She's a big winner. You win the oven mitt.
Hello, yes. My doll.
Thank you. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. You know, one of the clues that they gave me for you is that she's taller than both of you. And that makes me sad.
It's true.
Well, Melody, if you haven't had a chance yet to go out and see Once Upon a Mattress, perhaps you might be able to. You know, Bets is starring in the role of Princess Winifred, and her co-star,
yes,
Scott Reardon, is with us today, who plays Prince Dauntless. Amazing show, right up your alley, and your family will enjoy that so much, so you should try to get out there and see it out at Cabrillo. And,
definitely. I will definitely try to.
Yeah, and hopefully maybe next Sunday that they might... You don't have an evening show, do you, next Sunday?
We don't have an evening show.
Okay, well, Michael will pick you up.
Yeah. Exactly. Be a little chauffeur. That's fine with me.
That's right. We'll send a car.
He goes all out for theater, Michael.
Because Melody's...
I saw Melody's show over at Botello's.
That's right. You did. Mm. That's right. But Melody's bringing in somewhat of a new show, right? Melody, you want to tell us about it a little bit?
Yes, it is. It's about half of the show is new, and we've added some songs. And I think we only took out two songs.
Uh-huh.
We only took out two songs, and we've added at least five. Six, actually. We've added six songs.
Wow, that's substantial.
It's very fun.
And how is it working with that Bruce Kimmel guy?
Oh, it's awesome. I love working with Bruce. He's so helpful. And, you know, we just had a rehearsal yesterday, actually, and it went extremely well. Like, he usually has a list of notes that he always gives the person at the end of the rehearsal, and the list was very small, which is very odd for Bruce. I was very concerned when I saw the very small list, because he usually has at least two or three pages
of
notes. But we've gotten down to the notes that are very nitpicky and, you know, to make the show a lot better, so I'm very excited about it.
Bruce Kimmel nitpicky?
I know, hard to believe.
Well, Melody, I just want to say that Michael has spoken so highly of you, and after I saw you perform, you know, you always have that worry when you see young performers that you worry that, oh, they're so talented, they really offer something. How are they going to be in real life? How are they going to be off stage? And everyone I've spoken to, Michael especially, has said that you are just the kindest, you know, sweetest thing, and just in talking to you, it's so nice to see. Your parents should be very, very proud, because you're a very, very sweet, sweet person, and you deserve every success.
Oh, thank you.
You do. You know that. And as your family does as well, the nicest people on the planet. And Melody Hollis, ladies and gentlemen, opens her new show, Melody Land, at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal this Sunday, April 29th. And for reservations, you simply call 818-754-8700, and we promise you a wonderful evening of great food.
Get the fish and chips. Good fish and
great
chips.
Food, and certainly a great show. Melody, thanks for taking some time and speaking with us today.
Thank you, Melody.
No problem.
All right. You take good care, and you give your mom and your dad my very best, and your brother.
I will. Thank you for having me.
Bye,
now.
Melody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What a sweetheart. A sweetheart who is turning 14 years old this Friday.
14.
Mm-hmm.
Just very, very talented.
How mature was that conversation?
Crazy. Yeah.
In life.
Yeah. What? We've gotten to the notes that are nitpicky.
Yeah,
just killed me.
Exactly. You know. Yeah. She is too much.
Yeah. Well, she's just dull. She was, really
she was definitely the adult in the Andrea McArdle and Melody Hollis relationship.
Yes, probably. Yes. Probably, right? Oh, my goodness.
And she just, and I love the way she teased the answer. I think she knew the whole time, quite frankly. I think she was saving the Betts Malone for the end.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's a performer. She knows.
You know those show people.
She knows
people.
How to play
well,
that.
We need to put it all dramatic. Over Facebook, too. Yeah. So, and... You know, that's
I actually,
that's
I heard true. Her searching. I heard the mouse.
Yeah.
I heard the typer.
Oh. Okay.
But let's give our in-studio guest the intro she is due.
Yes.
Our first guest
please.
Is truly one of the Southland's most diverse stars of musical theater, from having starred in the title role of Evita to the groundbreaking jukebox musical The Marvelous Wonderettes, and now as Princess Winifred in Cabrillo Music Theater's all-new production of Once Upon a Mattress, please welcome the lovely, the talented Miss Betts Malone.
Nice.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I love Once Upon a Mattress. I've done it twice. I was in the chorus in like a community theater production, mm-hmm. then I did it in Stamford, Connecticut, and I actually played Dauntless.
Oh, excellent.
And I love the play. I just think it's just, I love the songs.
You're lucky
it.
That you've done it twice, because it just doesn't get produced.
It doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't, because you need a Winifred. You need someone who is, you know, she's the hub of the wheel. And, you know.
Well, you also need the role that Scott plays here, too.
Nah, Dauntless can be any schmuck.
It's Betts. Let's be honest. Come on.
But I say that because of the relationship.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And that's what they have as in this particular production, which Richard Israel has directed and Louis Welkenfeld has produced for Cabrillo. We talked about this the other night. They found a way, Richard found a way to put the humor that they have as natural performers, the two of them as natural performers, and the other cast members for that matter, into the production. It is not necessarily the funniest book in the world, but it certainly comes alive when the right people are saying the dialogue and understand how to, you know, transmit that to the audience.
Sure.
So it was not only delightful performance-wise, but it was also infused with this new element of looking very different than I've ever seen it look,
mm-hmm.
you know, very almost concert style, if you will.
Yeah,
brilliant
sure.
idea to put the orchestra on the stage and make it all about the unbelievable costumes, which I think are actually from Broadway.
Those
are
Broadway
costumes,
revival.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then just totally rely on the brilliance of the actors in the company and the lush orchestra, I might say, as well, right?
Those charts were beautiful. Beautiful. They sound great.
And there was just high energy. You know, it was a high-energy experience.
You know, it's funny because Scott and I were talking about it out in the lobby before we started, and he was talking about the costumes and how, you know, it's because it's not a concert presentation. It's far beyond that, but mm-hmm. it's not, you know, there's not a set, you
right.
know. But, you know, I started thinking about it, and it's not unlike what Glendale Center Theater does because they can't really have sets because they're in the round, these musical presentations in the round, and you don't really miss it once the people get started. I mean, if anything is that reliant on a set for people to enjoy it, there's a deficiency in the
mm-hmm.
content,
absolutely.
You know. So I think that's you know, I mean, it's always nice to see wonderful costumed people going around, but that's enough to carry. We're talking about. I mean, I saw Les Mis in London the first year that it was out,
mm-hmm.
and then I saw the choral presentation that they did where they're just on stage and they're in the full costumes and, you know, both affected me exactly the same. It just, you know, it's the content. It's not the, you know.
Unfortunately, though, I think that I agree with you, Paul, but I think also today on Broadway that Broadway feels a need to, and perhaps it's because of the motion pictures and television and all of that, that they are competing, you know, with this. So the production values and the expense of a Broadway show now to produce is in the multi-millions.
But,
sure.
But
and they're
it,
very reliant on set to
but
spectacle.
But is it that, though? Not sorry to interrupt you, but is it that, or is it because when you're charging $150 a ticket, people expect to see their money up on the stage?
I think it's a chicken and the egg situation,
which
started first,
yeah,
overdoing
right.
the production values or the high ticket prices.
right.
And speaking of the chicken and the egg, I do want to go back to the beginning of your career. And I found this lovely article online with this lovely photograph of that.
Oh,
at 10 years old.
Yes. That's and when I remember Mama.
I remember Mama.
I was Dagmar.
So it says here that your mother was a little reluctant to actually let you go and audition when you were young.
Well, for the first year and a half I was performing, I didn't audition for anything. I happened to be playing on the grass at my brother had a choir banquet, and I was playing with my sister, and some man popped his head out the door and said, "Hey, do you want to be in a play?" And my parents had always taken me to the theater, so I
was that kind of like, said, "Hey, well, you want to be in a play?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he wearing a trench coat or nothing like that, right?
No, actually, okay. It was probably very flamboyant, but I didn't recognize it then because, you know. It was more like, "Hey, do you want to be in a play?"
Oh, I see.
So,
like my car sounds.
Yes. Yeah. So we went and asked my mom, and she said yes. And Kathy Brombacher, who is the artistic director down at the Moonlight Amphitheater in Vista, she was the director of that show, and she took me under her wing and put me in everything. So then the first time I went to an audition was when they were doing Annie down at Star Lake Civic Light Opera. They were the first people to get the rights to do the show, and my dad basically told my mom, "Well, you're gonna have to put her up for adoption if you don't take her down there." So. So we went down, and it was the first, you know, real audition I'd ever gone to, and it was huge. It were just hundreds and hundreds of little girls, some clad in the red dress.
You said that was at Starlight Bowl? A bowl?
Starlight Bowl.
Yeah, that's the first theater I ever saw a musical at, or a play, for that matter.
Wow. So you when saw the airplanes and all that.
Everything, yeah. I mean, I was like 5 years old. It was Bye-Bye Birdie. I never forgot it, and it was the catalyst for me becoming an actor.
Well, that theater really was a catalyst for me, too. My parents had season tickets, so we were 45 minutes north of San Diego, but we would drive down every summer and see a few of the productions. And so we went down there and booked it, and it was interesting story. I went in, Kathy Brombacher was kind of coaching me for the audition, and they were convinced they would have a union little girl playing Annie, so she was training me to audition to be an orphan. And so she, you know, we were working up Hard Knock Life and Never Fully Dressed Without a Smile and had blocking and all the things that you don't want to do for an audition, but I was doing. And we get there, and there was a little flyer saying that, you know, seven little girls would be hired and one would be Annie. And I looked at my mother and I said, "I'm going to change my song." My mother said, "You can't change your song. You don't know the other song." I said, "I am going to sing Annie's song because I am going to be Annie." So my mom was clear across the room, and we were in these little chairs waiting to go into the audition. And the whole time she was giving me the stare, like the, "You cannot go and sing a different song." And I just kept looking at her and nodding my head. And I went in and I sang Maybe, and I booked it.
Well, there you knew. You knew at that young age.
Four callbacks later, but, you know, I was just like, I am doing this.
Now, let me ask you, was that behavior of that day, was that indicative of your childhood behavior? Was that a defiant moment? Or were you that strong-willed in all things at that age?
Pretty strong-willed at everything.
Okay.
And very competitive. I was a competitive swimmer for 13 years.
Okay.
You know, I just didn't really have any limits. You know, I didn't actually have any of those until I became an adult. And then all of a sudden you have limits.
Right.
You know, and you put them on yourself. But boy, I was just destined and to be a huge star.
Her folks. Yep. That's who
yes, I know.
About.
That's the second photo you've shared on the radio, Michael.
So sorry. So sorry about the other 60,000 people who are listening, but. All right.
Well, he's got a red shirt on. I can just describe it.
Well, no, they're very dear. I like this. Yes. This is a great article, so I'm enjoying hearing her bring it to life, actually. But. You say Annie, and then here we have lovely Melody on as well. I'm directing a production of it right now.
Excellent.
And for Glendale Center Theater, actually. And I'm was doing some research the other night, or over the weekend, on something. And I went to the actual upcoming Broadway revival website, only to learn that the young lady that I've cast as Annie was one of the six final girls who they show working with James Lapine and all of the, you know, hierarchy of the artistic team in New York.
Fantastic. Oh,
and wow. She never has mentioned this to us at all. She just came in as a regular on a regular call, and she amazed all of us, and we called her back, and there was something almost Meryl Streepish like her. I mean that in an interesting way. There's something so interesting about her going mm-hmm. on in her face for being someone that is 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so lucky. So interesting synergy in the Annies, right? Mm-hmm. That kind of popped
and
into our lives.
And she mentioned, I mean, was it on her resume?
No,
or?
It was not.
Wow.
It was not. And it had just happened, actually.
Huh.
She had just come back from the final callbacks in New York.
Because I don't think I ever told you that I actually played Annie.
You did?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. It was in Chicago and then Halsted Street, North Halsted Street. It was an all-male production of Annie, yeah.
So, yeah. It's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, yeah. But it's
it?
Okay because we don't have to talk about it because I've got pictures. And,
take a look.
Kidding.
Wow.
Kidding.
Everything you do, though, you put your own spin on. Bets Malone. I've never seen anybody do what you do so beautifully, and your characterizations. That I've seen you do Oliver. I've seen you do Wonderettes, of course, which I understand you're getting ready to direct. Is that right? The national tour of Marvelous Wonderettes.
It's going to be launched out of Georgia. And forgive me for not remembering the name of the theater right at this moment. I should have looked that up before I came. But it's going to go out on a non-union national tour.
Nice.
And we're also getting ready to do a sequel. It's called Wonderettes Caps and Gowns.
Uh-huh.
And it will play at the Lacuna Playhouse
this summer.
I noticed
that on their list of what was coming up, and I didn't know whether it was a new version or what.
It is. It's, if you know the original show, it is, Act 1 takes place approximately 3 months after Act 1 in the original show, and Act 2 is approximately 3 months after Act 2. So it's graduation day, and then the second act is Missy's wedding reception.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Have you seen
it?
Yeah, I saw it at the El Portal.
El Portal
mm-hmm.
Theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Enjoy. And did you do it at El Portal? You did,
I
right?
I did. Yeah, I did the very first version of the show in Milwaukee, almost 13 years ago, I think. So I've been at the prom for a really long time.
Oh.
My husband was very happy to see me at the Kingdom last week because he's, you know, he's seen me at the prom way too much.
Well, I don't even know how her husband is as talented as she is, Steve Guardini, who's the artistic director, producer
Musical
of
Cabrillo Theater
Music.
West.
Yes, Musical Theater West, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know, how do you see each other? The two of you are working like
we
crazy
don't.
All the
we
time.
We leave notes on the coffee table. And we see each other on stage.
What a life.
He's on his way down to San Diego right now. He's directing Sweeney Todd for the Moonlight Amphitheater, and they've got callbacks tonight. So.
Nice. Well, that's exciting. That's an exciting show to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's Bets Malone, if you have a chance to see her, ladies and gentlemen, at Cabrillo Music Theater in Once Upon a Mattress, you need to go. And you can do that very simply. It plays Thursdays at 7:30, Friday, Saturday at 8 p.m., Saturday, Sunday at 2 p.m. through the 27th of April. Excuse me, through the 29th of April. At the Cavalli Theater, which is, few people know, the largest theater on this side of Los Angeles. Everything, you have to go to San Francisco to find one bigger. So it's an 1,800-seat venue,
mm-hmm.
right? All right.
It's huge, yep.
Beautiful, beautiful theater, and it is at the Bank of America Performing Arts Center in the Thousand Oaks Civic Arts Plaza. Very easy to access right off of the 101 freeway, and for tickets, you simply go to Cabrillo Music Theater.com. The word theater is spelled with an R-E at the end of that. GabrielMusicTheater.com. And get tickets, and I would suggest you get them rather quickly because from what I saw the weekend, it was, the crowds were there in full force.
That's a very short run, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is a short run.
So
two weekends.
Yep, yeah. Two weekends.
And beautiful to look at and exquisite performances from not only Betts and Scott Reardon here, but their colleagues in the cast, of which there are many well-known regional musical theater stars in this production.
All right.
Awesome.
I'm going to kick off our arts calendar, if I could, Michael.
Yes.
A classic love story is brought up to date in one of the most stunning theatrical spectacles of all time. In Miss Saigon, Alan Bublil and Claude Michel Schoenberg.
Could you say that name again?
What is this?
It's not Michael Bublé.
What is it? Say it.
Alain Bublil.
All right, you put an extra L in there, then.
I did not. Yes, Bublil.
No.
It's the soft L.
But you just said it, Bublil, and now you said Bublil. And I think that L is extra. And Claude Michel Schoenberg, creators of Les Miserables, along with Richard Maltby Jr., bring Puccini's Madame Butterfly to the modern world in a moving testament to the human spirit and a scathing indictment of the tragedies of war. In the turmoil of the Vietnam War, an American soldier and a Vietnamese girl fall in love, only to be separated during the fall of Saigon. Their struggles to find each other over the ensuing years ends in a tragedy for her and a fighting chance for the child he never knew he had. Raw and uncompromising, Miss Saigon is an intensely personal story of the losses we suffer and the sacrifices we make in a world gone mad. Don't miss it now on stage through May 6th at the La Mirada Theater for the Performing Arts in California.
I say in California because we have many listeners across the country.
Oh, okay. But where in California?
La Mirada, California.
Oh, at the La Mirada Theater in La Mirada, California.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is the La Mirada Theater in California.
I'm sorry. Did I forget to put these?
Yes.
The La Mirada the yeah. second time.
Actually, you put La Bubil.
Oh, I did.
La Bubil. For tickets and information, call 562-944-9801. That's 562-944-9801.
That's a beautiful theater down there, too, that is run by Tom McCoy and his lovely wife, Kathy Rigby.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I always see her in the I get the calendar.
Yeah.
I always see her in there smiling from
She's
page
gonna
one.
She's going to be appearing at my nightclub.
Yeah.
In June.
Oh, is she?
Yes, she
oh,
is.
Okay.
And the whole cast of Peter Pan, actually. They're doing a big show for us there.
Oh,
it'll
okay.
be very exciting.
All right.
So, ladies and gentlemen, for further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts Live calendar, visit us at stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest that you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
And our next guest, having recently co-starred for 4 years in the world-renowned production of Beach Blanket Babylon in San Francisco, he returned to Los Angeles and can now be seen starring as Prince Dauntless in the all-new Cabrillo Music Theater production that we've already spoken about, Once Upon a Mattress. Please welcome Mr. Scott Reardon. How are you?
Doing good, thank
yeah?
you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been sitting there very quietly. You've just been very polite.
He's a gentleman.
Taking
civil.
It all in. You know,
yes, I just stopped grabbing my knee, and I think we'll be okay.
Don't sure
understand.
Thing.
You
sure
I can't
thing.
Say anything.
You don't want to take that
know,
much in.
You know. Thank you. Okay. Lady. All right. Anyway. So Dauntless.
Yes, sir.
So you get to sing I'm in Love with a Girl Named Fred.
I do.
Yes.
And she gets to run across the stage.
Yes. Over and over,
over
and over,
over again.
And over again. Yes. It's exhausting. What about, do you, are they doing all the songs from the original? So you have that song with the father?
Yeah, the man
the
to man song.
Bees?
Yep. And it's just one
very
of the hardest songs I've ever had to do, though.
Really? Why?
Yeah, because it. Not only am I watching David Newcomer, who plays my father, the king, watching his pantomime, I have to keep the music in the back of my head, knowing exactly when I need to come in with the lyrics
oh, right.
and the spoken lyrics versus the sung lyrics. It's it gets
oh,
me.
Oh, that's right, because the king does not speak.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So it's a lot. It's a lot.
Oh,
it's solo,
did,
but it's a duet. It's
you
definitely
mentioned
a duet.
The father. He did a fantastic job.
He's great.
In that,
he's great.
Uh-huh.
To be silent through a performance like that. And,
oh, yeah.
Until
and his miming skills yeah. just are wonderful. I mean, I think you can clearly get everything
totally.
He is saying.
There
yeah.
was another review I read recently of another show that he did, and I just remember reading the headline. It was Jason Rohr, who's been
oh,
on
yeah.
the show before, said something about, and the only reason I recall it is because Newcomer is such a distinct last name.
Mm-hmm.
As Michael Newcomer?
David.
It? David Newcomer is worth the price of admission. And I don't know what show they were talking about, but that's what Jason Rohr had said. I think I have it right.
Well, that's nice.
But
has
so he
Jason
done another
to say
production
something like that.
Recently?
I'm not sure, actually.
You don't know his performance
I know.
Schedule
I don't have his resume in front of me. I'm so sorry.
Read
so
the cards,
sorry.
Scott.
Oh,
read the cards.
Here we go.
You know what other song I love from that show is, and I never really realized the poignancy of it until later, because when did the show go up originally? 56? 57?
It's in the 50s.
Yeah, late
50s. Yeah.
Well, do you know, Michael?
I don't know the exact time period.
Because, I mean, Carol Burnett was on the Gary Moore show.
That's right.
After, was it after, you don't know Carol Burnett's resume either?
No, I don't. I know Carol Burnett.
Was she on the Gary Moore show first and then in What's Upon a Mattress?
I think she was on Broadway first.
Okay.
I think Broadway first.
Okay.
Gary Moore. Big hurrah.
Yeah, kind of brought her on and...
But the reason I say because of the time period is because the song Normandy is so beautiful.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we don't really, for any of the people who lived at that time and had just gotten through World War II, Normandy meant one thing, which was storming the beach at Normandy, and it
right.
was the, you know, it was this horrific event. And it was just like, it's so touching, because that song is so beautiful, and it just harkens back to a time where Normandy was just this beautiful beachfront community, and
right.
it just did.
Yeah.
And I didn't, when I was a teenager doing the show, I really didn't put that together, and I don't know how intentional that was, but I just always, that song always stuck with me. It's a beautiful song.
Well, it's a
song.
Very melodic.
Yeah,
in the show.
It is.
But you know what I got a thrill out of was the Spanish Panic. Just because it was done so well, you know, and relentlessly, you know, intentionally long for, you know, to get her exhausted, to have a, you know, go right to sleep, which is
right.
part of the plot. But well choreographed, and just, you could see everybody just, I mean, you had to be breathless at the end of it. Really?
I'm not allowed to be.
Yeah. No. Bets has to be energized
exactly.
the whole time.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it's great. And it's definitely a marathon for Bets and I from that point to the act
song
one finale.
Of love too, yes.
Yeah, it's just, we're just running around sweating and singing and moving. It's crazy.
It actually takes three people to get my dress off me at intermission because I'm so sweaty, I can't get it off my body.
Oh, really?
Yes. And
oh,
because Sarah Jessica Parker doesn't weigh anything, and I do. So my costumes are quite snug.
Oh my. Look at what you learn here on State of the Arts.
But I forgot about Spanish Panic. That's just as exhausting for you.
It really is. Yeah. And it beautifully choreographed by Cheryl Baxter. Oh. And Richard Israel put some comedy in there as well, and it's great.
Yeah. Exactly. And you're a good dancer. I didn't know
Why,
you
thank you,
that
sir.
Well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I have a good time.
Yes.
Are you a trained dancer?
Yeah. I mean, in college, I took dance classes. It was part of our curriculum to go ahead and have a BA in drama and musical
well,
theater.
Well, so I had to do that, too, and I danced like other people's seizure. So,
it works.
So
for
just because
panic.
It's
it
addressed,
fine.
I was just going to say, just because it's addressed in college doesn't mean you're trained.
A trained dancer.
Right. But I just, you know.
But, you know, Scott's 4 years that he spent up there in San Francisco in Beach Blanket Babylon, have you ever seen that show?
I have not.
You've never seen it?
No.
It's fun.
Tell people about it, Scott, because it is fun. It's amazing. It's kind of institutional. There.
Yeah, it is. It's actually the world's longest running musical review. It's in its 37th year. It might be in its 38th, possibly.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah. So I like to explain it as SNL set to music. We use skits as well as pop culture, things going on in the news, and we incorporate it into the show that involves Snow White going around the world trying to find her Prince Charming. And she meets a bunch of zany characters. A lot are made up and fictional. And then we have, like, President Obama. We have the Jonas Brothers. We have Lady Gaga. You know, all these different pop culture figures that come into play, too.
When is the most... When have you done it recently, or...?
I left there in March of last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
almost a year ago.
Wow. Now, what you're describing, how could that possibly play well in San Francisco? That's what I don't know.
Oh, it's popular.
That's
huge.
Great.
And the thing is, it's great for tourists, anyone who comes, because
it's a spectacle,
it's such an instant. Yep. Yeah, it's all about wigs and hats. The final showpiece is a 300-pound San Francisco skyline hat that one woman wears on the stage.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's in North Beach,
North Beach,
right?
Yep,
and
North Beach of San Francisco.
The very famous...
Club Fugazi.
There, yeah,
mm-hmm.
There you go.
Great location. It's a cabaret setting. You can drink while you're watching the show around cabaret tables, 400 seats.
Really?
It's wonderful. Yeah, great intimate environment to see these huge creations on stage.
Have you seen it, Beth?
I've never seen it.
Wow.
I had a girlfriend who went up and played Snow White in it for a while, and... I've just had a few people that I've met, and Scott's, I think, my third friend who's done the show, but I never saw it.
Wow.
It's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
To run that long, it's just like, well, I guess when something is so topical and changes so much that it never gets old.
We have people who come probably once every 6 months who actually live in San Francisco because they just want to see what's new, what has changed, what
have
we put in.
It's like Forbidden Broadway was like that. It just kept changing and, you know, making it topical.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
In fact, that was just on stage, right? Just closed down in Long Beach.
I saw it last night. Actually, it's got one more weekend.
One more weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Another great show.
Corbin Broadway's in town?
In Long Beach at Musical Theater West.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I didn't even know that. Passive plug.
And,
Musical
of course,
Theater
with
West.
Larry Raven in it and
David
Engel.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne Blakeslee.
Hard to go wrong there.
Now, so...
Val.
What? Who else?
Oh, I can't can't remember her last name. Val Fagan.
Valerie Fagan.
She's fantastic. Oh,
oh. And she's in Bourbon Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In Long Beach.
In Long Beach.
I wanted to ask Scott one more thing.
Yeah.
I just jumped in with my favorite songs in the show. Do you have ones that stick out for you in this particular production? Not necessarily the ones that you sing, or
right. You know, I really love Shy. Just being able to watch Betts every night, because the whole ensemble, everyone is on stage watching that, and just being able to interact with her and just follow her around the stage during that number is so much fun to me. And then I also love, I'm always in the wing waiting for my entrance, but I love watching Sensitivity, sung by Tracy Lohr. It's just, she's hilarious as the queen, just a wonderful Queen Agravain, and I laugh every time I watch it.
And my personal favorite, actually, is Happily Ever After, which Betts does.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's a killer barn burner, yeah.
Yeah.
Happily, if I'm happily and thoroughly satisfied, is that the one?
Yeah, that's it.
It's very kind of bump and grindy.
Yeah, oh yeah.
A little jazzy.
Yeah.
And the one that you mentioned, Shy, that's, if I remember correctly, really testing the cockles of the memory here.
Watch your mouth.
It's internet radio. We can say whatever we want. You have like one line in that, right? With nani noni.
Yeah, I just kind of, bumble through nani noni nini noni nani.
Stuck in my head. I can't remember my own friggin' phone number, but I remember nani noni nini.
You're going to come in for me this weekend and say that one line.
I will. And I'll dance too.
There it is.
And
yes.
People will throw crutches onto the stage. They'll think it's a benefit for Jerry's kids when I dance. Oh, sorry. That was bad. I apologize. Hey, everyone can't,
That's true.
That was a slam on Jerry Lewis, not against any disabled person.
Oh, I know
that. Was.
I know that.
I was mocking Jerry Lewis only. Please don't send letters. Please don't.
You know, I do have to say one other thing too that impressed me very, very much at the theater, and it's Lewis Wolkenfeld's amazing association that he does with all of the businesses out there in that area. I mean, they're so supportive of the Korea Music Theater. But the I guess one of their newer supporters, especially for this production, is a mattress company, if I'm not mistaken, which in the lobby has 20 mattresses, real mattresses, built into the lobby with all of these fabulous things hanging off of them, and like, you know, big stuffed animals, and there's a table set up, and the people are coming over, and it's I guess they're giving discounts out on mattress purchases. And
what a great idea!
I thought, how brilliant is that? Too?
And no P company decided to jump on that.
No P company, no, no.
How many P companies are there?
I know. Exactly. It's like
it only takes one.
Just a Jolly Green Giant is there. Oh man, that's funny. That's a great idea. What a great marketing
plan. It was indeed a very smart one. Very smart one. But and Lewis was, he's one of those very charming men. So he gives a curtain speech right prior to the show. Very gracious. They do a lot for the armed forces here and
they
their families who they invite to see these shows. And I think a couple of distinguished gentlemen were at the Saturday night performance I saw. And don't they come in larger numbers at some point?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, to one of the performances. And they have a nice talk back with the audience, I think, after the Saturday matinee. You did that?
Yeah, this past Saturday afternoon. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the whole cast attended.
Yeah, it was great.
Very special for the people to be able to touch you.
Yeah, I think it's a nice little thing. Yeah.
You said matinee. You have two show days with us?
On Saturdays, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's got to be brutal for you. I mean, that's got to be pretty exhausting.
It's pretty tiring.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish it was a six-month run, because I would lose a lot of weight.
Right. Right. We get our cardio in, that's
get to
for
that
sure.
Sarah
you
Jessica
know,
Parker.
You know what makes, I'm curious about this, and Richard Israel, if you're listening, or Lewis, you should think about this if you haven't already. Why do you see a show of this quality, and it's a show, as you said earlier, is not done very often.
Mm-hmm.
Why not take this thing on the road to other theaters? I mean, even if you did it just throughout the state of California, you know, it's such a beautiful production, and it's so self-contained, really.
Right.
You know that it's probably easy to travel.
I think the biggest thing, well, obviously financial reasons, but I think you don't know how great a show is until it opens, and then it's too late to make the decision that you're going to move it and be able to keep everybody involved and intact. And, you know, people are
that's
moving.
A good point.
Like our Lady Larkin is going off to Tuacon right after the matinee on Sunday to start a contract there that she'll be working until the end of October. So. Mm-hmm. You know, you just, everybody comes, that's the magic thing about theater in these communities is that you all come together. This is a gorgeous, lovely group of people inside and out, and we're all having the greatest time. And on Sunday, we're just going to explode into all different directions, yeah. And some people will never see again. Some people will be our lifelong friends. It's a fascinating business.
Yeah. Remember when you used to do shows? I remember when I did shows when I was younger, that, like, closing night was, I remember being distraught when I was a young person.
Oh, I cry on every closing.
Oh, sure.
You know, I mean, still very emotional about it, but I remember in high school and stuff, people, like, racked with sobs on when the show was over, and it was just like, it is, because that will never be shared by anyone again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things, your group of people, no one else will experience that.
Yeah.
It might be the same show somewhere else across the country, but these 29 people that we have will never...
Yeah,
you know,
that's always why theater always has it over film and television for me, because there's that immediacy. It's and not just with the performers, but also the people in the audience. That what they experience in that room will never happen again.
Exactly,
and
absolutely.
It's just saying that's what you get. So that's why you go out, you don't rent a video.
Absolutely, and well, maybe what we were just talking about, maybe this production can be the catalyst for it to go out on the road. Mm-hmm. And get you all back, say, a year and a half from now.
Right.
Sign you all up. And
well, and it's a great, I think it's also a great show to do outreach for, just to get children back into the arts.
Absolutely.
Especially with it being cut so much across the country.
Wow.
You know, it's just a fairy tale, but it gives a different aspect about it. It twists it a little bit, you know, and I just think it's a great, great musical to introduce young kids to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree one more time, ladies and gentlemen, to go out and see Once Upon a Mattress at Cabrillo Music Theater. Very simple. All you have to do is call them either at 805-449-2787 for tickets, or visit their website, Cabrillo Music Theater. That's with an R at the end of the word theater, CabrilloMusicTheater.com.
And also, I have the program right in front of me. I think we should give a shout out to the Sleep Shop. Because I
that's
guess they're the mattress sponsor.
That's it.
And that's Sleep Shop, S-H-O-P-P-E. So just...
absolutely.
People should... when looking for a mattress, go to Sleep Shop.
Yeah. Yes, that was a nice endorsement.
You like that?
Yeah, they owe you
money. Trying
now.
To make up for my faux pas earlier with handicapped children.
Oh, Lord.
So anyway.
It's come to the baptismal time of our guests.
Yes. At the end of every show, we always like to ask people about some mishap that might have happened during performance, good or bad, but hopefully fun for you to recollect. Do either of you have tales you can share?
Well, since we had an Annie theme going on, I'll tell you a story about my... when I was hired to do Annie, they also did a huge publicity campaign and got a dog from the Humane Society, which our family adopted, and then they sent over a trainer from SeaWorld, believe it or not, to train this dog with me every day. Well, comes opening night, and the dog can't do it. So they ended up paying for a TV dog to come in. They got paid more than the producers on the show to come in. But the TV dog didn't want to have anything to do with me. So every night before tomorrow, they would smear veal-flavored baby food on my neck and on my chin so that the dog would pay attention to me during tomorrow.
Wait, was he a good kisser?
Yeah.
I gotta tell you.
And the combination of dog saliva and veal flavored baby food actually gave me a rash.
I have to tell you, the most unnerving part of that story for me is finding out that there's actually veal flavored baby food. Give the baby something that's locked in a crate.
I have a feeling that if I ever came across it again, it would send me to therapy or something.
And you said you got a rash?
Yeah, that's that combination. I had a rash on my neck for the entire run.
I want to be in the doctor's office when that when you're having that conversation. Yeah, you do have a little irritation, Betts. Have you been using a different soap, or maybe a fabric softener? No, it's veal flavored baby food. Okay.
Oh my!
And I still wanted to go into the business.
It's devotion.
Scott, we got 2 minutes. What do you got?
Yeah, just harkening back to Beach Blanket Babylon, I played a lot of different people, and I had about 9 specialty fat suits made for me across my 4 years there. I was like, I would just eat more. I like food, but they wanted me not to get fat. But So I played Snooki from Jersey Shore, and I also played, I can't remember who the other character was.
I would have paid to see that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a sight, let me tell you. But so for one, and everything's a quick change. Everything. I have 90 seconds to get from one character to another, and it's just a completely different wig, costume, everything. My fat suit was set incorrectly, and so it was the wrong fat suit. And it was the Snooki one that I was putting on under a different costume, and it would, that Snooki's butt, that was all that padding, would not fit over the dress of this other thing I was had to get into. And so someone literally had to grab the padded butt, yank the stitches out, and just like pull. So it was just like we were just trying to tug of war with this butt padding.
Like instant fabric. Oh,
rip it off so I can get on stage because there's no one else to go on and do anything.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, they ripped it off. I ran on stage and I did whatever role that was.
Backstage liposuction.
Exactly. That's the real show for that.
With it's that just it was the that backstage. Easy.
Yeah.
Really?
Anyway. That's
wow.
funny.
Well, show business.
Crazy.
Was it like a soft sculpture thing that they had? Like
yes.
A,
yes, okay. It was a nice pillow padding, in case I fell.
Well, listen, we want to thank you both so much for joining us on Monday and bringing some levity to this show today.
Yes, we're very, very grateful. And join us next week when our sponsor will be baby-flavored veal food. That'll be next thing.
But, thank you, Paul.
Thank you both, and thank
Thanks
you so
for
much
having
for joining
us.
Us.
Thank
and we
you.
Will see you all next week.
Indeed.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio. Yeah.